Chapter 61. Hiram Lusana could not distinguish the features of the man standing in the doorway of his prison. He looked large, but not as large as Fox. That was all Lusana could tell. The flashlight in the stranger's hands blinded him. "I take it you lost the ship's popularity contest," came a voice that sounded more friendly than hostile. The dark form behind the light moved closer, and Lusana felt his bonds being loosened. "Where are you taking me?" "Nowhere, but if you value social security in your old age, I suggest you get the hell off this boat before it's blown to pieces." "Who are you?" "Not that it matters. The name's Pitt." "Are you part of Captain Fox's crew?" "No, I'm freelance." "I don't understand." Pitt untied Lusana's left hand and started on the other without answering. "You're an American," said Lusana, more confused than ever. "Have you taken the ship from the South Africans?" "We're working on it," said Pitt, sorely wishing he'd brought along a knife. "Then you don't know who I am." "Should I?" "My name is Hiram Lusana. I'm the leader of the African Army of Revolution." Pitt finished with the last knot and stood back, aiming the light at Lusana's face. "Yes, I see that now. What's your involvement? I thought this was a South African show." "I was kidnapped, boarding an airplane back to Africa." Lusana gently pushed the light aside. Then a thought flooded his mind. "You know about Operation Wild Rose?" he asked. "Only since last night. My government, however, was aware of it months ago." "Impossible," said Lusana. "Suit yourself." Pitt turned and started for the doorway. "Like I said, you better jump ship before the party gets out of hand." Lusana hesitated, but only for a second. "Wait!" Pitt turned. "Sorry, I can't spare the time. Please hear me out." Lusana moved closer. "If your government and the news media discover my presence here, they will have no choice but to overlook the truth and hold me responsible." "So?" "Let me prove my innocence in this ugly affair. Tell me what I can do to help." Pitt read the sincerity in Lusana's eyes. He pulled an old Colt 45 automatic from his belt and passed it to the black man. "Take this and cover my ass. I need both hands to hold the flashlight and read a diagram." Somewhat taken aback, Lusana accepted the gun. "You'd trust me with this?" "Sure," Pitt said offhandedly. "What would you gain by shooting a total stranger in the back?" And then he motioned for Lusana to follow and quickly darted down the passageway toward the forward part of the ship. Turret number 2 had survived the onslaught from the Satan missiles. Her steel plating was gouged and sprung in 8 places, but never penetrated. The port outside gun barrel was severely fractured at the recoil base of the turret. Dazed, Fox saw all this through the shattered remains of the glass in the bridge windows. Magically, he was untouched. He had been standing behind one of the few remaining steel bulkheads when the Satans had unerringly zeroed in on number 2 turret. He snatched the microphone.
"Shaba, this is the captain. Do you hear me?"
The only reply was a faint ripple of static.
"Shaba!" Fox shouted. "Speak up, man. Report your damage."
The speaker crackled to life.
"Captain Fox?"
The voice was unfamiliar.
"Aye, this is the captain. Where is Shaba?"
"Below in the magazine, sir. The hoist, she's broken. He went to fix it."
"Who is this?"
"Obasi, Captain. Daniel Obasi."
The voice had an adolescent pitch.
"Did Shaba leave you in charge?"
"Yes, sir,"
Obasi said proudly.
"How old are you, son?"
There was a harsh coughing sound.
"Sorry, Captain. The smoke. She's really bad."
More coughing.
17.
Good Lord, Fox thought. Duval was to have sent him experienced men, not boys, whose names and faces he had yet to see in daylight. He was in command of a crew who were completely unknown to him. 17. A mere 17 years old. The thought sickened him. Was it worth it? God, was his personal revenge worth the terrible price? Stealing his determination, Fox said, "Are you able to operate the guns?"
"I think so. All 3 are loaded and breached tight. The men don't look too good, though. Concussion, I think. Most of them are bleeding through the ears. Where are you now, Obasi?
In the turret officer's booth, sir. It's awfully hot down here. I don't know if the men can take much more. Some are still out. One or two may be dead. No way of telling. I guess the ones that's dead are the ones bleeding through the mouth.
Fox squeezed the microphone handle, his face filled with indecision. When the ship went, as he knew it surely must, he wanted to be standing on the bridge, the last battleship captain to die at his station. The silence over the radio phone became heavy with torment. Ever so slightly, the curtain lifted and Fox glimpsed the terrible dimension of his actions.
I'm coming down.
The outside deck hatch is jammed tight, sir. You'll have to come up from the magazines.
Thank you, Obasi. Stand by.
Fox paused to remove his old Royal Navy cap and wipe the sweat and grime oozing from the pores of his forehead. He gazed through the splintered windows and studied the river. The cold mists rose along the shallows and reminded him of the Scottish lochs on just such a morning. Scotland. It seemed 1,000 years since he'd seen Aberdeen. He replaced the cap and spoke into the microphone again.
Angus 2, come in, please.
Gotcha, Big Angus 1.
Range.
80 yards short, but right on the money. Just compensate for elevation and you got her, man.
Your job is finished, Angus 2. Take care.
Too late. I think the dudes in the khaki suits are about to take me away. So long, man. It's been a heavy date.
Fox stared at the receiving end of the microphone, wanting to speak words of appreciation to the man he'd never met, to thank him for jeopardizing his life even if it was for a price. Whoever Angus 2 was, it would be a long time before he could spend the money placed in a foreign bank account by the South African Defense Ministry.
A street sweeper, snorted Higgins. Fox's spotter drove a goddamn city street sweeper. The city police are booking him now.
That explains how he moved through the roadblocks without arousing suspicion, said March. The president seemed not to hear. His attention was trained on the Iowa. He could clearly make out small forms in black wetsuits darting from cover to cover, pausing only to fire their weapons before moving ever closer to the machine guns that dwindled their numbers. The president counted 10 inert SEALs sprawled on the decks.
Can't we do something to help those men?
Higgins gave a helpless shrug.
If we open up from shore, we'd probably kill more SEALs than we'd save. I'm afraid there is little we can do for the moment.
Why not send in the marine assault teams? Those copters are sitting ducks once they land on the Iowa's aft deck. They each carry 50 troops. It would be mass slaughter. We'd accomplish nothing.
I agree with the general, said Kemper. The Satan's bought us a breather. Number 2 turret appears to be knocked out. We can afford to give the SEALs more time to clear the decks of terrorist opposition.
The president sat back and stared at the men surrounding him.
Then we wait, is that what you're saying? We wait and watch while men die in living color before our eyes on that damned TV screen?
Yes, sir, Higgins answered. We wait.